We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's going on, everybody? The first episode of the Bronx Pinstripe Show after the Yankee season has ended. So we're in uncharted territory as we move into the offseason here. Scott, how's it going?
Good. Episode number 39 is the one where we're going to ramble about everything and anything and start doing that because we're going to be doing it all offseason. So, like you said, uncharted territories, man. So let's do it. I know we do have some Yankee stuff to talk about, and we always will be talking about Yankees. But the rest of it's just going to be freelancing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll get into a bit of Yankee stuff because, you know, it's been a week since we're recording this on Tuesday. First thing, actually, we should mention is that the podcast will be coming out on Tuesday morning going forward in the offseason instead of Monday morning. I think the reason we're doing that, just so we can talk a little bit more NFL, have some more time to digest some of the stuff that happened over the weekend with football. And we'll fit into our schedules a little bit better as we move into the winter here. But so this is Tuesday that this episode is coming out. It's been a week since the Yankees lost to the Astros, so I think we have some thoughts on you know the Yankee season and why it ended so abruptly and all that stuff coming up. I know I've sort of developed some opinions over the last week on the Yankees.
It'll definitely be a different flavor than you know after the last game when we recorded that night when we were just completely emotionally dead at that point. I mean, you're definitely going to hear, I think, different voices at this point on you know when we're talking about the season now than directly after the game. So,
yeah, I went back and listened to that because I wanted to see what we sounded like. You know, first of all, I was a little buzzed and definitely pissed off at what the team did. I thought it was pretty coherent thoughts, though, for midnight after the season just ended.
Yeah, I mean, I even got my voice, my singing chops going for the first time ever. It's the first time I've ever sang in public, if you consider this in public. So
you weren't like a chorus guy in high school or anything?
No, I took in high school I didn't do any of that, but in middle school we had to do either chorus or we had to do an instrument.
Yeah.
And I definitely faked my way through like three oboe concerts, like by looking at the kid next to me. And the only reason I did the oboe is because my sister had one in the closet.
There you go.
No, yeah. I'm not very musical.
Me neither. I was in the chorus, but I basically just stood in the back and mouthed the words because I didn't want to sing.
Nice. Well, there you go.
Another thing though we want to mention before we get into some stuff this week is that we started a Facebook group for the podcast. It's called The Bronx Pinstripe Show. It's a group where people you ask to join. It's open to anyone. You just got a request to join. And then in there we're going to be posting different subjects, different articles, different, you know, topics that we might want to talk about. Really the goal here is to get the listeners involved with the show, and hopefully we can sort of add to the whole mailbag voicemail aspect of the show.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to be doing that more on social media too, as far as the mailbag and just getting you guys all involved. You know, we have Bronx Pinstripes has a pretty good following on Twitter, and then Facebook and Instagram. So we definitely want to get everybody involved and just get them kind of more into the show. So definitely going to be using social media a lot more, and that Facebook group is a really good way to talk with me and Andrew as well. We're both in there and you know, jumping in on conversation. So definitely come over and check it out. If you don't find it in the search, you can go to our Facebook page and you'll see it on there. One of the links, we've linked to it on there. So
yeah, and I'll definitely be tweeting it out as we go here because I want to get it to grow. But yeah, I was happy to see that a few people asked to join right away. So that's nice to see some of the listeners joining up there.
Yeah, it's always good to put some faces with names too. You know, I mean, we've gotten some guys who write in on a pretty regular basis. So I know we talk to a lot of you guys on Twitter as well, but I don't know. Facebook gives you a little bit of a different element as well. So if you're on Facebook, definitely check it out.
So Sunday was a bit of a sad day for me because I was in New York City and the reason I was there is because I had tickets to Game 3 of the ALDS. Had the Yankees reached it. So I was kind of thinking what might have been had the Yankees made it past that wild card game. It was a beautiful day out. It was like 70 degrees, perfect, you know, fall baseball weather. But instead, I was stuck at a bar drinking, watching some football instead of at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, it's kind of bittersweet, I guess. You got down to see to hang out in New York, but unfortunately, it wasn't for a game. We all knew that was one of the risks, though, of getting those tickets. So, and probably one of the things you probably expected to happen in your deep conscious.
One of the sadder emails I got was the refund information from Ticketmaster.
Yeah, that's one time you don't want to get money back.
Yeah, exactly. I decided to just spend it all at the bar, though. All the money for tickets just went straight to beer.
There you go.
So Sunday was supposed to be, obviously, like I said, the game. But as soon as the game got, you know, not canceled, as soon as the Yankees didn't make it, my girlfriend was like, oh, I have an idea. Instead of, since we're not going to go to the game, let's go to SoulCycle Sunday morning. Have you ever heard of or been to SoulCycle?
No, so I had not heard of SoulCycle. I had no clue what it was. So you have to tell me about it. And this was in the morning or this was during football?
No, this was 9:30 in the morning after going out, you know, for dinner and drinks Saturday night. Uh-huh. Yep, this was 9:30, rude awakening in the morning. Going to SoulCycle. SoulCycle, the best way I can describe it, is like the worst possible club playing the most horrific EDM music mixed with a bunch of basic bitches and basic bros cycling in the morning.
Got to get that sweat going. Work it out, baby. 9:30 in the morning, Sunday morning. That's exactly what you want to do. So how was it? How long are they?
It was an hour long.
Good God. And it's just like straight, like there's an instructor and they're like, you know, just giving you your
instructor
what they do.
Yeah, like screaming at the top of her lungs, like trying to motivate you, like being all inspirational, like you can do it. You can do anything you set your mind to.
And you're doing this for an hour?
Are you guys ready to ride? Yeah, an hour long.
Wow.
It wasn't easy. I'm not going to lie. It was not easy.
No, just riding a bike for an hour is challenging. Do they, are you allowed to like set your bike for a certain,
they do it for you. And as you go, you crank up the resistance. Like as the class goes, it gets harder and harder as you go.
Right.
And it's not like you're just sitting down on the bike. You're like,
you're getting
bouncing
it.
Up
you're
and down
it, yeah.
And you're like, your thighs are burning right. 20 minutes into this thing. But I'm just looking around as I'm there. I'm like, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. I still want to be asleep. What the hell is going on?
So you bought a membership. So you're going to be going back?
No.
SoulCycle Boston.
I declined to sign up for more than one class. Mm. I don't know that I will be going back.
Well, next time you're in New York, you know, you could go back and visit your favorite instructor and you guys could do SoulCycle again.
It's one of those super like trendy douchey things where people like. Go online and reserve their spot. Like they reserve their specific bike, like where it's situationed in the room.
Oh, really?
It's like a reservation type thing.
No kidding. Okay. So people have to have like their bike and their spot.
Exactly. I was spot 17.
Did you get dirty looks because someone else was spot 17 and you took it? Like they're on like 16 and they're like, you son of a bitch. I'm at 17 every week. And then
I did not see any of that, but there was a girl whose birthday it was who made sure to tell the entire room it was her birthday three times as she took selfies while doing the SoulCycle.
Selfies while doing the bike?
Yeah.
Hmm. This sounds like something I don't ever want to do. Ever.
I don't recommend it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did it and not me. So.
Well, that's why I'm here to tell. I'm up. Here to warn people. Yeah. If you ever get dragged to this, just be like, no, let's just go for a run or just rent a bike and go riding. Go right outside. That could be pretty nice. But yeah, SoulCycle, it was not very fun.
Well, at least you got some football and beers and wing afterwards to, you know, put those calories back on you.
Yeah, I did. I totally, it was like I had such a healthy morning and then I just totally ruined it all.
Yeah. I don't know how you go healthy when you're watching football and you have to drink beer and eat wings. So the SoulCycle didn't really, didn't do what it was supposed to do, I guess.
So your Jets were off. That's sort of like a good thing, though. You can just sit back and relax and watch all the games, not have to worry about the Jets game.
Yeah, I actually didn't even watch football much yesterday. And, you know, I don't know if it's a direct correlation, but my fantasy team was terrible yesterday. So I think it's because I wasn't, like, sitting there watching Stat Tracker. I think my team actually does better. They feel me watching, so they do better. And I was, I mean, just awful yesterday. But, no, I actually went to a really cool event. It was this thing called Treasure Chest, and it's basically a beer and food festival. A brewery called Green Flash Brewery puts it on. They have a They're out of San Diego.
Yeah. Green Flash is good. I've had that beer.
Yeah,
I've had their IPA.
They have a ton. They have like six or seven IPAs. They have a lot. They have a lot of beers. But definitely check them out. They actually have some really good stuff. But they actually put out a new beer that is called Treasure Chest. And I don't know what the proceeds are, but it was a fundraiser basically for breast cancer awareness. And, you know, it's one of those deals where you go and a lot of the proceeds, I don't think they make any money. They're just donating most of it to a local charity that does breast cancer research and awareness and things like that. So went there with a couple friends and it was fun. It was a good time.
Nice relaxing Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, you know, it was the first time I hadn't watched football all year, so it was I was definitely on my phone checking scores, but not as much as the Jets. So I took advantage of the bye week.
It was an exciting. At least the 1 o'clock games were exciting. A lot of them came down to the very end. Like the Redskins Falcons game went to overtime. The Seahawks Bengals game went to overtime, and I don't know. The Bengals might actually be legit. I mean, I know they always sort of
playoffs. Yeah,
yeah. They always get off to 4-0 starts. You know, 4-1 starts, and everyone's the Bengals are the new powerhouse team. And then come December, they've got 9 wins, and Andy Dalton is pooping down the side of his pants. But they did beat the Seahawks. That's not an easy game.
It was at Cincy, though, right? It was away.
Yeah, but I mean, Seahawks.
Seattle's not the same team away. They're a different team when they're not at home. And I don't know. Like, I've watched a few of their games, and Cam Chancellor definitely makes a huge difference in that secondary. I mean, he literally, I think, puts the boom in the Legion of. Because without him, there's not as much fear. I mean, Sherman was getting lit up without Cam Chancellor there because... I think alone, they're just definitely not the same team. But, I mean, yeah, that's a good win for Cincinnati for sure. Andy Dalton is turning into, he's kind of like the NFL's Clayton Kershaw. He's phenomenal during the regular season, but needs to show that he can do it in the postseason. So we'll see. And did the Redskins lose on a pick six, I think? I didn't see the highlights of it. I don't know if you saw.
That game was on sort of to the side. I don't know exactly what play ended it. It might have been a turnover, but at the end of the game, they kind of so Atlanta was driving, and there was a touchdown that was called back because sometimes I just don't get the NFL rules. Devontae Freeman catches a screen pass and runs into the end zone, but because he doesn't control the ball all the way to the ground, it was ruled back. But then it's like you see, and the ball just sometimes just has to cross the pylon or the tip of the goal line, and it's ruled a touchdown when the guy's, jumping over a big pile. I just want the NFL to get their rules together and just be consistent, because I feel like they're talking out of both sides of their mouths half the time.
Wait, did he catch the ball in the end zone? And that's why?
No, before.
So it was just before, though. He didn't have control while going into the end zone.
Exactly. Right? It was one of those, he didn't make his football move yet type thing.
Right. I mean, we saw something with the rules on Thursday night with the game with the back of the end zone. It was the Bears. I'm sorry, the Lions and the Seahawks, right?
Oh, right. That was Monday night when they punched, when Cam Chancellor punched the ball out.
Exactly. So the rules are all... First of all, they didn't even know that was a rule where you can't bat it out. I always thought it was completely legal because you see punters doing it all the time, where they bat the ball out of the end zone or they kick
exactly.
it out of the end zone.
Well, it was like the rule had gray area where it can't be intentional.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Punters do it intentionally all the time.
But it's your own ball.
I guess, because they didn't have control of the ball. That was
right.
One of the issues. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, so there's definitely some weird rules. I mean, we're seeing it in baseball too, because there's definitely play. I know we're going
to
get into the play,
we'll get
the Chase Utley slide, but there were a whole lot of things going on with that, with the rules on that play too, and replay just threw a totally different another wrench into that rule as well. So,
well, I mean, last week Jim Caldwell didn't know the rule, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't even have a pulse. He's just like a stuffed, he's a wax statue essentially. I have never seen that guy talk, never mind know the rule book.
But it's not the same. It's not the same like the Fail Mary where they ruled it a catch in the back of the end zone. To me, this isn't the same. Like the ball was punched out. It was going out of bounds. The guy
That's
hit it before
thing.
It went out of bounds. Like, get over yourself. You were losing the game. You should have lost the game. Who cares about that stupid rule? You know what I mean? It's a dumb rule in the first place. You lost the game, and you should have lost the game.
So. It was going out of bounds regardless. Yeah. Which
there,
then you
there was
asked
no injustice
why,
done. There was no injustice.
But then you asked, it's like you say to the I forget who punched it out of the end zone for the Seahawks, but you're like, why'd you touch the ball?
Right, because nobody knew that rule. That's why. Everybody, I don't think anybody knew that rule. They were asking the guys. They were asking like Ray Lewis and Steve Young after the game too, and they didn't know the rule.
Ray Lewis is useless.
But I'm saying a lot of those guys don't know that rule. I didn't know that rule either. I think that was one of those unknown rules. I mean, the Lions didn't even put up a big fight because they didn't know the damn rule.
So here's the thing. Shouldn't every coaching staff have like a rule savant whose sole job it is to know the rule book, you know, every sentence in that rule book? So if something comes up, he can be like, yo, head coach, you got to challenge this or you got to say something because, you know, rule, you know, Article 2, Section B, blah, blah, blah. Why does every team not have a guy like that?
Yeah, I don't know. That seems like an easy thing to have, too. You just make one guy that guy.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I don't
know.
Sits
up in the booth and he knows.
Right. Yeah, and it would do, you know, it'd be like replay for baseball. You have like a buzzer, like, yeah, replay it. You know, you're waiting for this guy to buzz you before the flag comes out. So, yeah, I don't know. There should definitely be that guy. Maybe Detroit just doesn't have that guy.
Oh, Detroit definitely doesn't have that guy.
Yeah, so, but yeah, it seems like an easy job to create.
Absolutely.
It's even just a side job, you know what I mean? It's like...
But yeah, I mean, getting back to this week's football action, I think you're right. The verdict is still out on the Bengals. Andy Dalton definitely has to prove it before I'm gonna have confidence. Before I would ever have confidence in the Bengals.
Right. I know. I totally agree. We'll see what happens. But that division's actually a lot different than it has been. Baltimore's not good.
Roethlisberger being
Steelers,
out.
Steelers, don't have Roethlisberger, so that's a different team. So we'll see. Cleveland's actually putting up some numbers and playing pretty well.
Was another game.
McCown's playing pretty well. He just set like an all-time record, I think, for Cleveland Browns. I want to say yardage, or it was completions, or I think it was yardage. They're actually surprising some people right now, and their defense isn't bad especially with Pettine in there. You know they're going to put a pretty good defense with Hayden in the back. I know he's banged up, but they have a solid team that they could probably get better with McCown as he gets more reps with the guys there. So
I guess Johnny Football is never going to see the field.
He doesn't deserve to see the field. I mean, that was he's such a just like a little, you know, trick guy. You know what I mean? He's just like a, I don't know. He's a sideshow is what he is. He's not a real NFL talent.
He was a freak athlete in college who was able to put up numbers because he was so athletic and talented. But I mean, he's not more athletic than people in the NFL. So that sort of goes out the window.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I was bringing up the Redskins game too, because I wanted to tell you about a bet that I have.
Okay.
So I went to my wife is from Northern Virginia, and her brother is a diehard Redskins fan. And when I was in school in Norfolk, Virginia, there's like a lot of people down there. That's kind of Redskins territory. There's no one else to root for, and a lot of people come down from Northern Virginia. So anyway, I just don't like Redskins fans. I think they're completely delusional. They're a mess.
You don't feel bad for them a little bit?
No, I don't. I don't feel bad for them at all. Because of the people. It's because they're so cocky every year for no reason. It makes zero sense.
Yeah, don't you have to win before you get cocky?
I'm sure the Giants fans who are listening can attest to this when you run into a Redskins fans. Like, every year they think they're going to do well, and every year they suck. And they've sucked since, what, Mark Rippon? I mean, they have not been good for a long time. But anyway, so I made a bet with – I was at my brother-in-law's house. I don't know. This was 2 years ago, I think. And my nephew is, I think he was 10 at the time. And I was sitting there, I'm like, all right, let's make a bet. Like, he was just talking all sorts of shit. And I'm like, I bet you, I think I was 33 at the time, and Eddie was 10, so 23. So I made a 23-year bet. I was like, look, Eddie is going to be my age before, or no, they will not win a Super Bowl before Eddie is my age. And so it was by far the longest bet I've ever made, but I am so confident that I'm going to win this 23-year bet. We put $200. We put it in like a fund.
Wow,
so
$200. I was going to ask how much is that stake?
It was a couple hundred bucks. Hopefully it'll grow, you know. By the time I'm able to put it out. Yeah. So, but I am so confident. I mean, with the RG3 trade that set them back, probably sets you back 10 years, right? I mean, it's close to 10 years with the draft picks that they lost. I mean, they haven't had a first-round draft pick in a very long time. So I think they might have had one this year, actually. But I don't know. That franchise is a disaster. And I know a lot of people listening who are Giants fans can't stand them. And so there you go. I made a ridiculously long bet. And I'm hoping now. I don't even have to hope. It's just going to happen. They're not going to win a Super Bowl. I mean, the Eagles have never won a Super Bowl. So The Jets haven't won one since 69.
It's, I know. I mean, I'm with you. It doesn't look like they're going to win a Super Bowl, but you don't know what it's going to be like in 15 years.
They'll be
That's a ballsy
team.
Bet, though. I like it.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, I don't know about you, but whenever I'm with, you know, with buddies and having a couple beers, eventually we just get to the point where we're just making $5 bets with each other on stuff. Usually not 23-year long bets, usually like season long bets.
Yeah.
But you know, we always have to write them down because there'll be like 10 made per night.
No, we do the same thing. We do. It's always like a standard as a case of beer. That's like our standard bet with a lot of my buddies. I mean, I bet a kid like that Chris Chambers was 5'10". He said he was 6 foot, and I bet 5'10", and I won a case of beer on that. That's one of my favorite bets because it was so random. But
yeah, but that's just like right or wrong. I mean, you just look that up, and then
exactly,
and then that's it.
It was terrific. No, but this year I have multiple steak dinner bets based on fantasy football because we did an in-person draft and we did like no technology. I think I talked about this before, but we did no technology draft. And so we all started drinking a lot. We were all hanging out. And at the end of the night, I was making all sorts of bets. And we started making them for steak dinners. So yeah, those are some good ones. I think it was Eifert and Jason Witten. And I had Witten. And that one's like, it's really close. But when Romo went down, I think I got screwed.
So we talking like Outback Steakhouse steak dinners or like Capital Grill steak dinners?
Yeah, like a good steakhouse. It's a steakhouse of the winner's choosing. So it's not a cheap. It's not a cheap bet.
No, that's an expensive date.
Yeah, it's a gentleman's night out, and eat some steaks, drink some scotch, and gloat. And then the other one was I got this one on the bag. This one I had Gio Bernard, and he had Eddie Royal. So I'm loving that one right now.
Yeah, I have a friend who anytime he drinks gets really cocky about bets, and I'm always the one to make the bets with them because I always think they're the worst bets. For instance, he bet me that the Raiders would win more than 4.5 games this year. So I think we got $5 on that.
Okay. See, that $5 doesn't do anything for me though.
It's more bragging rights of just making bets.
So I've gotten to a point where I need it to be worth my time as far as like, otherwise I'll just forget about it. Like $5 bet, I would just forget about. So did you take the under on that?
Yeah.
I actually think he's going to win. I think they're going to win 5 games.
You think so?
Yeah, I see it. I see it happening. I think they've been very close. And they already have 2 wins, don't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's a bet you might lose.
Well, at least I didn't bet a steak dinner. It's only $5.
There you go. See? Not worth it.
But it's still fun.
But yeah, so yeah, I actually think they're going to be okay. I think that team is on the rise with Latavius Murray, who's a Del Rio's doing some weird things with him. Like he's getting benched in the second half of games. But you know, I think David Carr?
Yeah.
No. Or is that his brother?
Yeah, it's one of the whatever his car is. Yeah, it's his brother. Yeah.
So I actually think he's got some good potential. I think he's the real deal.
But if you saw last night, towards the end of that game, he threw a crucial pick and cost him the game.
Did he? Yeah, I didn't see it. I didn't see
so
it.
So that's like Oakland Raiders football.
Yeah. All right. They were playing Denver. I mean, Denver is 4-0 right now, or 5-0.
Exactly. I mean, Denver is a good team.
So.
All right. So I think we've both been watching quite a bit of the baseball playoffs. Let me ask you, do you remember the MLB playoffs for the divisional round stacking the games like this? So they start at like 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, or whatever it was for the 9:45 when the Dodgers and Mets played over the weekend. Do you remember them being like that?
I do remember them being like a late afternoon game occasionally. But
I'm loving what MLB is doing with the scheduling. There's just every day there's just a playoff game on, and it's basically from early in the afternoon till midnight.
I just don't like the TV contracts and what they're doing with the television stuff because
you don't have cable.
Well, I know, but I get channels. I find ways to get channels, but TBS I do get, but Fox Sports 1 I don't get, and I feel like a lot of people don't get Fox Sports 1. Fox Sports 1 is one of those weird channels that if it wasn't added to your regional sports package, even if you have cable, because it's such a new network, that I think a lot of cable providers don't have it. But like, why can't they just be on Fox? Like, why can't you be on Fox? Why can't they bring him back to Fox? Or it's the same people. They bring him back to Fox or NBC. I don't know why these major networks aren't going after the playoff games. I think they do. I think it'll be on Fox, right, for like the ALS, the championship series, probably.
Yeah, exactly. But TBS has one of the championship series.
Do they? Is it okay? So I mean, I get TBS, so that's cool. But the Fox
They bought the rights. They bought it for, you know, long-term contract. Yeah. I mean, Ted Turner, obviously he's involved with baseball, with the Braves and everything.
But I know, so I guess Fox is just trying to push this Fox Sports 1, and that's why they're doing it, rather than having it on Fox.
Maybe they don't think it'll get the ratings on a Tuesday afternoon or whatever.
I guess, but what the hell else is on Fox on a Tuesday afternoon? I mean, you think that you get more people watching it because it's network television and everybody gets network television? If you have a TV, you get network television. Doesn't matter if you have cable box or anything because it's all digital now. You can hook up an antenna and get it. So I don't know. I don't get that one, I guess. I see that they're just trying to push the network, but it'd be the same people. You know, it's the same guys, same ownership, so... I don't know. And then some of them are on MLB Network. Like, yeah, I know some people don't get MLB Network. I know some of my friends don't get it. You don't get it, you said, right? So,
no. Well, the Toronto game started on MLB Network because the Kansas City game. Kansas City came back in that game, by the way. We can get into that in a second. But, yeah, it was the Toronto game started on MLB Network, so I wasn't able to watch the first couple innings.
Yeah.
But Kansas City was down in the eighth inning in game four in Houston. They were down by four runs, and they ended up scoring five runs. They got, like, six hits in a row, I think. They sent 12 guys to the plate in that inning. I think the Yankees had, like, five base runners total against the Astros last week. So I'm loving watching these games. Good teams.
Yeah, they're fun to watch. They're definitely fun to watch. The definitely the most intriguing series, the two, I think, are Mets-Dodgers, obviously for what happened with the Chase Utley thing, and then the most intriguing, based on the teams and the rivalries, is the Cubs-Cardinals. Like that's a hell of a rivalry right there. That's a good matchup, and the teams are actually pretty well matched up too. So that's a fun one.
You know what I was thinking that Cubs-Cardinals series reminds me of is kind of, you know, back in 03, 04 with the Yankees-Red Sox, and how the Yankees had always been big brother to the Red Sox, obviously up until 04. But do you remember just that pit in the bottom of your stomach that, oh shit, if we lose to the Red Sox, it's going to be that much worse? That's got to be what Cardinals fans are thinking.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I don't really know, like, the hatred between those two teams. Like, are people that angry in the Midwest? I feel like they're definitely not as angry as us on the East Coast.
But that's still one of probably baseball's biggest rivalry right now. It's bigger than Yankees Red Sox right now.
Now, no doubt. It's just it's a different type of person, I feel like, in the Midwest than there is on the East Coast. Like there's a lot of assholes on the East Coast and people who have very opinionated ways of acting and talking, and I don't know. I feel like they're nicer in the Midwest.
But I feel like Midwesterners, that you can get a wild card, wild card person at one of those games. You never know.
I guarantee there's a couple guys in the crowd.
Like there's a lot of shirtless, teethless people at
those games. Toothless people. Yeah. The it's a good rivalry, and comparing the two, because the Red Sox hadn't won in so long and the Cubs haven't won in so long. Yeah, I definitely. It's probably a very similar. The Cardinals have been winning a lot too, so it's a pretty good analogy actually.
The Cubs got Arrieta going tonight, and he's basically invincible. Hasn't given up a run in 2 months at this point. So, assuming he sticks with that, looks like the Cubs are going to be up 2-1.
I am very happy that this Jake Arrieta never showed up in Baltimore. This dude I hadn't seen him pitch pretty much all year. I mean, we watched the Yankees games. It's hard to watch a lot of other games. And other teams. So I really hadn't seen Arrieta pitch much. I'll tell you the truth, I didn't know this dude had 20 wins up until like a couple weeks left in the season. Like he was approaching that. I didn't realize he was as good as he was.
Look at his stats the last 2 months of the season.
No, ridiculous.
Legit didn't give up runs.
I know. It's crazy. No, that's ridiculous. And by watching him, you can see why. I mean, the movement on his pitches is ridiculous. He's got some just sick movement, late movement on his stuff. And he's kind of got a little bit of a deceptive delivery, too. So
throws across his body.
Yeah, he didn't have all this when he was with the Orioles.
No, this is all new.
So I'm wondering, what is the pitching coaches in Chicago, who's he been working with, or is this something that, sometimes pitchers take a little while to find their groove or to find their, their thing. So I'm just glad he did it in the National League and not over here.
Yeah, can Nathan Eovaldi talk to that pitching coach in the offseason?
He is. That's exactly what he's doing. We're seeing this exact thing. Just wait. Give him another year.
Okay. If Eovaldi turns into what Jake Arrieta, let's make a bet on that. How about?
Okay. I'll make a bet.
All right. So if Eovaldi wins next year, do you want to do it on wins or like ERA? What do you want to do?
It's Eovaldi. I'm going on wins. I'm not stupid.
All right. What's the – so, well, first of all, what's the number of wins?
So what did he have this year? He was 15? 15 yeah. or 16?
All right. Keep talking. I'll look it up.
So we'll I think we should set the bar pretty close to, because I think this year he got lucky in a lot of them, you know.
Definitely.
Obviously.
14.
So,
he was 14-3.
So 14. So let's give him
career high in wins, obviously.
So let's give him, how many innings was that?
154 innings.
Okay, so let's
say, you want to set it at 16.5 wins?
No, you're going 2.5 games more than what he did this year, and he got really lucky with a lot of.
But he
of
also got hurt for the last month of the season.
Okay, so I'll go 16 wins.
Well, we can't have a push.
Why not?
Well, let's set it at 15.5 then.
Fine. Got him.
I want him to win more.
That's fine. It doesn't mean he's going to. It doesn't mean you don't have to bet with what you want. Bet what you think. So you think he's going to win 15, but you want him to win more.
No, I would say he'd probably win less.
Okay. There you go. Bet. 12-pack of beer.
All right. Mark it down.
Done.
Arrieta has been unhittable, and he's pitching with, like, insane confidence right now. He knows he's unhittable, and that's a scary thing. I mean, he went out there against the Pirates, who were a 98-win team, good team. He didn't even have his best stuff, and he still pitched a complete game shutout. He just totally is pitching on another level than anybody else in the league right now.
Yeah, he feels untouchable right now, and that's huge for a pitcher. So good for him, man.
And it's interesting, you know, if you're just looking at stuff, Kershaw might have the best stuff in baseball. But he doesn't have that killer instinct in the playoffs where he thinks he's unhittable like he is in the regular season. And that's why we see him get hit sometimes. That's a mental thing half the time.
Yeah, and to tell you the truth, that's kind of what scares me about a lot of these Mets pitchers, because I feel like those guys have that. I feel like those guys don't give a shit at all. And they don't go out there with the thought of losing at all. I really believe that. Those guys, they have the mental makeup to be they have the mental makeup to have like four top line starters. It's ridiculous, actually.
But in the playoffs, a lot of times, that's just as dangerous as talent sometimes.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, you saw what Madison Bumgarner did. He just didn't think anybody was going to touch him, and he just went out there and pissed his ass off. And I wouldn't say that he's got the greatest stuff in the world. I mean, he throws hard, and
no, his stuff is good, but it's not.
It's not like,
you know,
crazy.
Not top five in the league.
But he went out there and he before every pitch, he knew damn well that he was he had the confidence that he was going to get that guy out. So and it definitely showed.
It was like A-Rod through his career in the playoffs. I mean, he had the talent. He just didn't think he could do it. And he went up there and struck out half the time.
Yeah, well, I could talk about his mentality too. Yeah, he's not the most mentally strong person in the world.
So were you watching the Utley play when it happened on Saturday?
I woke up, I think, right before that play happened. I was watching the game, and I fell asleep on the couch. And then I woke up, because it was late. I don't even know what time it was. But, yes, I did see it. I saw it live.
So, first things first, do you think that was a dirty play by Utley?
Okay. So, this is what I think. I got to give a bigger explanation just by saying it's dirty or not dirty. I love his intensity, and I want every single player in Major League Baseball or whoever's on my team to go in with that same intensity. I think the slide was late, but I don't think it was. I'm not going to call it dirty. I think it was late. I think he slid late, and it was the broken leg was a byproduct of a late slide. He could have touched the bag if he wanted to. I mean, he could have reached out there. He was within the reach of the bag, which is all you need to be. And what's his face? The shortstop.
Tejada.
I think his name Tejada.
Tejada.
Also was in a kind of a weird place where he was. She was going to spin and throw the ball. Like, he didn't have. He was outside the bag, so it kind of made Utley, I think, not go into a slide early enough. So I think there were a lot of things that went into it. So I'm not going to call it a dirty play because I don't think the intent was to be dirty. I think he just slid late and it looked really bad, and then obviously had a bad result for the Mets or for Tejada. So no, I don't think it's dirty, because I think in order for it to be dirty, I think it has to be intentional to be dirty.
I mostly agree with you on that. I think it was a borderline dirty play, though. I mean, he didn't slide. He basically jumped into his legs after he was already even with second base. He made no attempt to just slide hard. That was he was taking down Tejada no matter what.
Which is what you're taught. You're taught to break up the play no matter what. You break up the play.
Yes. I think he could have probably broken it up without doing the way he did.
No, I agree. But that's why I think there were a lot of factors that went into him actually sliding late. I think the fact that where Tejada was positioned kind of affected that as well. I mean, look, it's bang, bang at the end of the day. You're trying to break up the play. That's what he was focused on. So, yes, was he probably going later than he normally would? Absolutely. I don't know. I don't see it as, like, intent to be dirty. Like, he's not trying to, like, obviously not trying to break this guy's leg. He's trying to just take the play out so they can't convert, because it's a huge play.
And you're right.
If they get the double play, the inning's over, and the Mets are still up by one. If he breaks up the double play, the run scores, tie game. Huge play.
And you're right. I mean, I want my guy to do that. Yeah. If Chase Utley was on my team, I'd want him to do the exact same thing.
So there's so many things that go into this because of the play on, or the call on the field, like what it was actually called originally, because it was an opinion. Basically, he looks at it as a judgment call, right? So there's so many things that go into it.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, why the Mets fans and some people on Twitter and then also on the radio had a complete mental breakdown, is because of the whole replay aspect of it.
Let's get something straight. If that was Derek Jeter and it was another team, I would be going livid. I guarantee it. I would be apeshit about it. So I get it. I get the intensity for the fans because they're mad about what happened. And in a lot of ways, I could see why they felt wronged, just because of what happened and what happened at the end with Tejada breaking his leg. But you know, the umpire called. So this is the one thing I didn't really understand why people were so upset about, the fact that he got the bag, because my understanding is when the umpire makes the play, makes the call at the bag, when he called Utley out, that play at second is dead. It's a dead play. It doesn't matter what Utley does. He could go back and touch the bag. He could jog into center field. It doesn't matter what he does. He's out. He's just got to get out of the way at that point. So the fact that I think that he didn't touch the bag is actually a moot point. It doesn't matter. But that's what they're so livid about. A lot of them.
But that's
livid.
So confusing when you think about it, because Utley, like, he ran off the field.
But he was called out. That's why he ran off the field. He was called out. The play was dead. The umpire called him out. He was out. Why would you go back and touch the bag if you were called out? It's dead. As far as the runner goes, that's it. There's nothing else you can do.
I guess. Yeah.
So everything went down to the fact that did he touch the bag or not? Because the play, the call on the field was out.
True.
So it didn't matter what they did.
But then the Mets just had their bullpen had a complete implosion, and Dodgers tie the series, and you got guys like Will from Queens calling up Mike Francesa crying on air.
Yeah, that was a good one. My brother texted me that there was a Deadspin article having everything.
Mike, I don't know. I just can't handle what just happened tonight, Mike. Hilarious. Francesa just not giving a single shit either.
Well, just, he was just like,
are you crying? Are you crying?
He's like, Harvey has to do it. He's got to do it tonight. Tonight's the night. He's got to do it. Because if he doesn't, then I just don't know. Harvey has to do it tonight. Tonight has to be the night.
But you know what? The bottom line is, I wish the Yankees were in the playoffs and I could be sitting there ready to have a complete mental breakdown because of playoff baseball. There's nothing better than that.
No, it's look, they're passionate. They're obviously, they want it. They've not had it in a long time. So, you know, I don't know about crying on air, but
well,
Francesa, he offered him tickets or something.
Yeah. So, he's going to actually, no, his, the ticket next to him, they're going to watch the game together behind home plate.
That's ridiculous.
Need a camera on that.
That's some nonsense. That's what you got to do to get tickets, to go sit with Francesa, some ridiculous seats to a playoff game.
Well, that's the thing with today. Like, if you go viral on the internet, you basically get handed free shit.
That's true. Yeah.
So
crying players, some, crying fans. I mean, you
some
know.
breaking developments going on right now. The Rangers are up 7-1 in the fifth inning, and they just brought David Price in.
You mean the Blue Jays?
Yeah, sorry. The Blue Jays are beating the Rangers 7-1 in the fifth inning. They took R.A. Dickey out, and they just brought David Price in.
Why?
I have no clue. They have a game five, assuming they win today.
Weird. They're up 6 runs, and they brought in David Price?
Yeah.
Okay. Is Joe Girardi guest managing?
did John Gibbons have a phone-a-friend, and was that friend Joe Girardi?
Yeah, it must be.
Unless it's just they're getting him, like, you know, 15 pitches because it's his throw day or something. But still, like, you have a game five coming up. Do they have no confidence in David Price? I know he is 1-6 in the playoffs.
I guess not on short rest. I guess that wasn't an option. But wouldn't you want him to be ready for that game to come in relief if you needed it?
But no, he could have started on full rest game one.
Oh, game one.
I mean, sorry. Yeah, he started game one, so his game five would be full rest.
Oh, well, I don't know. Even if it wasn't full rest and you wanted him to be available, you wouldn't have him throw today. So I don't
know. Really, not in a 6-run game.
No, yeah, that makes no sense. I don't know.
Interesting. Do you think?
I hope it doesn't work.
Do you think David Price's continued playoff struggles are going to affect his contract that he gets from some team this offseason?
I doubt it. I think when you have a top line starter, there's not a lot of these guys, so he's going to get his money. So no, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think teams overlook that. They really do.
It can go the other way, though, because I think the reason Pablo Sandoval got 100 mils because he is Babe Ruth in the playoffs.
Yeah, but you're not going to lose a guy because of that and just expect him to suck in the playoffs again. I don't know. I don't think it's a thing. It didn't affect A-Rod's contracts.
True. All right. So do you want to get to some Yankee thoughts and then we can get out of here?
Yeah, let's do that.
So, a week removed from that wild card game, and it's clear to see, especially when you look at the rest of these teams, the Yankees were just maybe at one point the Yankees were on par with these teams, but the last month of the season, they just were not. They were completely overmatched. They were old. They were tired. They were fading. They did not have the depth in roster to compete at the end of the season. And you saw a team like the Astros come in, who's a young, athletic team. And yes, I know they have Dallas Keuchel, who's probably going to be the Cy Young. So, you know, that's the most important part of it. They had their pitcher go out there and shut the Yankees down. But the bottom line is they're just a more younger and more athletic team. And we saw that last Tuesday.
If you look at the rosters throughout baseball right now with all the teams that are doing well, you're seeing a lot of youth. You're seeing a lot of athleticism. And that's just not something you see up and down the Yankees lineup. The Yankees have a lineup that was orchestrated for a different type of baseball than what we're seeing right now, I think. And I agree. Like, the depth was not there, especially the pitching depth. I mean, our bullpen was really in shambles towards the end of the season. And, you know, going into a series, a 5-7 game series, looking back, I think that bullpen would have just gotten eaten up. Because we don't get depth from our starting pitching, and it's not
right.
You know, where was that going to all of a sudden? Why was that going to all of a sudden start when you're in the playoffs? It wasn't, and we were going to go to the bullpen early and often, and I think that would have been the death of us. I mean, not to talk about the fact that we can't score runs or we didn't score runs. So, you're right. I think it was a tired lineup because of the age and the amount of guys that they had that are just older dudes, the pitching depth was definitely lacking.
Well, and you got, I mean, they also nobody was playing well. That, I mean,
right.
Even their guys who'd been got them there that season, Brian McCann was having an MVP type season for the first 4 months of the season, and then he disappeared. Jacoby Ellsbury, we saw him have lighted up the first 50 days of the season, then he gets hurt and he never comes back. Brett Gardner was an all-star in the first half and then hit 200 in the second half. So all these guys, I mean, and Girardi said it in his post-game or his post-season press conference. He said, well, if we have guys put up their numbers from their first half in the second half, we probably would have won the division. No shit.
Yeah.
But no, but like you can't say that. Of course. You mean if they all stayed healthy and all kept raking the ball, then they would have won the division. Like you, but you can't assume that's going to happen. You can't go into next season assuming, oh, Brian McCann had 17 home runs in the first half of the season, so he's going to do that in the first half and the second half next year, or whatever the number was. You can't assume that going in.
Yeah, but that's what's also frustrating, too. If you listen to the press conference with him and with Cashman, these guys are, the way that they were talking was that, hey, we're going in to 16 with a lot more – or with a lot less questions, is what they said. A lot more answers. We know a lot more things. And my response to that is what in the hell are you talking about? What more do you know? You know that Tex is going to do the same thing that he did in the first half of this year? You don't know that. He's another year older. He's coming off of an injury.
Another injury.
Same thing with A-Rod. Like, we saw what he did in the first half. Can he do that again at age 41? I mean, To say that there's less questions, to me, just doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. You have an older Beltran in right field. You know, you're not going to have the production for a guy like Greg Bird because they're trying to put him in the minor leagues.
Oh my God!
There's a lot of things that are just, I don't understand the comments on that.
Cashman said that you know, assuming the roster doesn't change over the winter, it looks like Greg Bird is going to be ticketed to Scranton to open the season, which First of all, I don't know why he said that, but obviously you don't know what's going to happen between now and February.
Well, he was asked
if
that.
If Greg Bird is not on the 25-man roster to start the season next year, I'm going to organize a riot.
But that's the thing, though. So you're looking at this, though, and if Teixeira's healthy, and then you have A-Rod and Beltran basically clogging up the DH spot.
I don't care. You have a 22-year-old rookie on the rise who hit 11 home runs in 46 games for you. You need to find a place for him. You need to develop him as a player.
Well, you just gave your own answer. You just gave the answer of what they're saying. They're trying to develop him as a player. So if they're not going to
develop a guy.
But if they're not going to put him in any other position, he's got to play, and they want to develop him as a player. So that's why they're going to give him every day at bats at first base in AAA.
You can get
that's what they're saying. I'm just.
You can get him 5 days a week at bats in the major leagues, and they're going to listen. With the age of these guys, they need to start resting guys.
No, I agree. They should
play,
be doing that.
Greg Bird can play 6 days a week. Mark Teixeira can't. A-Rod can't. You know, I think we saw that with Brett Gardner and Jacoby Ellsbury, and certainly Carlos Beltran next year. They're not everyday players anymore. There's a reason they faded in the second half of the season. It's because they were tired.
One thing that really gets me with Cashman and Girardi, with the way that they assess, maybe it's just the whole Yankee organization, the way that they really just they pin people into certain positions and don't give them any other opportunities to go elsewhere. You know, when we talked with the guys at Corey at Ivy Envy, we're seeing him talk about their number one prospect, Chris Bryant, who Joe Maddon has at third base, at first base, and right field, and center field, and left field.
It's so awesome to see.
Yeah, he's all over the place. And they're, you know what they're doing is they're giving him on-the-job training. So the fact that hey, Greg Bird's our number, are going to be our first baseman for years to come, and that's where we want him. We don't see him as anywhere else. To me, you're making your team worse by you know what, maybe he's not the greatest left fielder in the world, but can he play at a pretty good level? Probably. He probably could. So why not give this guy an opportunity to get on the field and try it? You can experiment a little bit in the beginning of the season with defense. I'm sorry, but you can. You can do that early in the season and see where a guy can play a little bit.
Because they always play it safe.
It's
they always sit
the
on
book.
Their hands,
I mean,
and
like,
play it safe.
You see a guy like that who's athletic and a baseball player, baseball players play baseball, and a lot of them can play different positions. So, you know, like the whole thing with Refsteiner has been up, when he was up, he showed perfectly fine at second base. He did not show like a terrible defensive second baseman. I didn't see that guy that they're talking about. You know, I know he made a lot of errors in AAA. I know the first half of the season. The second half of the season, he started coming back. But you know what? Let the guys play. Let's see what they can do, because sometimes people rise up and sometimes people will game up for a certain situation. And when you have a guy like that, get him on the roster. I agree with you. What I was saying before is I'm kind of giving what they're telling you, you know, what they're saying to us as Yankee fans. But I want to see him play other places. I don't care if he's not as great as someone else. Beltran's been terrible in right field. You think Greg Bird can't play a right field like Carlos Beltran? Please.
Put a trash can out in right field and it'll catch more balls than Beltran caught this year.
But that's just what I'm saying.
Just by luck.
So why not put Greg Bird, you know, why not, like, right field is not that hard of a position in the, if you're a major
especially
league baseball
Yankee
player.
Stadium.
Right. So why not try to put him in right field, have him platoon with Beltran, Tex, and DH. Boom. There you go. Yeah. Regular at-bats. I just solved the situation.
So getting back to Ref Snyder, though, to hear them talk about Ref Snyder, it's like, whose wife did he sleep with?
Yeah.
Because they hate him. Girardi was asked about, you know, with what Ref Snyder showed down the stretch, is he your go-to guy at second base next year? And the only, it's basically the only position they said they're not set on next year. They're like, well, we're going to have to look at what Ref Snyder is, what's in the organization, what's out there on the free agent market, and then we'll make a decision. So they're not committing to Ref Snyder.
Expect them to commit to him. I mean, I understand they're not
committed. But at least they could have been like, yeah, I mean, he came into a tough situation when we had to plug him in the last 2 weeks of the season, and he did a good job, which is the truth.
You're right. They did not give him the credit he deserved. You're right. He did not say, hey, this kid came up, he sat for a month, it seemed like 3 weeks, and then when he got forced into a situation because the other second baseman was confused and dizzy, then... He played well, and he played a good second base, too. I mean, God forbid they admit that he played a pretty good second base. God forbid. He probably made one of the best plays at second base I saw all year with that diving ball up the middle. I mean, that was an awesome play, an athletic play. God forbid we have someone who's an athlete out there.
And he can freaking hit.
And he can hit. He gets on base. He's a relatively patient hitter already, and you know with every at-bat, that's just going to grow more and more. And he's a right-handed bat who gets on base and hits for average. Do you know how much we could have used that during the season? Jesus.
It's just crazy to think that, you know, Ref Snyder, this was his second professional season at second base. So there's going to be some growing pains. But assuming he works on it in the offseason, he could come into next year and be a solid defender. Derek Jeter made like 30-something errors in 1995 in the minors at shortstop, and then they stuck him out there in 96, and I'm pretty sure he turned into a damn good shortstop. So it can be done. And to think that they could have Didi and Ref Snyder as the double play combination, and also a nice, you know, 8-9 combination in the order for the next 2 years is pretty fun to think about.
Let's get them to gel. I mean, God forbid we get these guys some time together so that they can, you know, work out some mojo and get a little bit of a groove together, because when you have a second baseman and a shortstop playing well, especially on the defensive side, you know, good things can happen. So, look, I understand why they're not going to be like, Ref Snyder's the guy. He's going to be the guy.
Sure,
but why not say, hey, Ref Snyder is absolutely going to be competing for that position, and we like what we saw in at the end of the season with the young kid. We like what we saw. Why not say that? Why not give him some confidence going into the offseason to work his ass off and you know, be at least in the conversation by not saying, oh, we'll see what's out there. We'll see what's out, you know, what other Joe Schmo we can sign.
It was literally the only position they didn't say that about. They're like, well, you know, Chase Headley is our guy next year. Brett Gardner's our guy next year. Ellsbury, Beltran, McCann, Teixeira, they're all our guys next year, except the second base is the only position.
At least they didn't say Stephen Drew is our guy next year. At least that did not happen. But he kind of alluded to the fact, I forget who was asking questions, but they framed it in a way that said, hey, is Ref Snyder and Ackley going to be your second base tandem, basically against righties and lefties? And he almost didn't deny that. I mean, I could see Ackley in the position. I kind of want to see Ackley competing for a spot. He's got all the talent in the world as well, and he gives you a little bit more versatility, you know, playing first base and you know,
Ackley was pretty bad second baseman.
Right,
he did not look good.
But I still want him in the conversation. I think he's a good utility guy.
He's a great utility guy. He can play that Martin Prado role.
Yeah. Even, honestly, Stephen Drew, if he was this year, was a utility guy, I would not be mad at him, because he would have been a great utility guy. A little pop at the back, some defense at the end of the games. I just didn't want to see him every day, all day.
So. I guess my takeaways from those, you know, Cashman and Girardi press conferences were they almost seemed like they were okay with the end result of the season, considering, you know, everything that went on this year, that they sort of, in a way, overachieved.
I think a lot of them thought that. Well, I think that's the safe way to frame it, isn't it? To frame that, hey, we did better than we expected. I mean, that's the that makes you look better if you're framing that and people are believing you.
This is not a team. They essentially built the team that we saw this year was the team they built at the beginning of last year.
Right.
You're telling me they went out and signed Jacoby Ellsbury for $153 million and Brian McCann for $85 million and Chase Headley for $55 million to be an 86-win team and maybe get into the playoffs?
No, I agree.
No, they built them to win the division, and they didn't do that.
I think Ellsbury is a big bounce back candidate next year. I mean, he's better than he showed. The guy that we saw early in the season is, I mean, probably not that all year, but we're closer to that guy than what he was.
He's had one and a half good seasons in the major leagues. The rest of them have been very average.
Yeah.
He had an MVP type season in 2011 where he hit 30 home runs. I wonder where that came from. And then last year in Boston, he played very well.
Yeah. I mean, I expect him to play a lot better next year. I think, you know,
yeah, he's better than he was, but if we're expecting him to be the,
he's not going to live up to that contract.
He's not, of course, no. It might go down in history as the worst contract in Yankees history.
Carl Pavano.
No, that was only 4 years. That was 4 years. This is seven.
Yeah.
And there's a whole situation where there might be a little bit of bad blood between him and Girardi now because Girardi sat him in the wild card game, and Ellsbury didn't show up for post game press questions.
Well, I mean, we've seen that before. We've seen Girardi sit A-Rod, and there's been no ill will. The guys have a good relationship, so I'm not going to directly say that that's going to cause bad blood. I mean, at the end of the day, they're professionals, and they should act like professionals.
Girardi even acknowledged it. He said, "Yeah, he was asked directly, is there going to be a rift between you and Ellsbury because you benched him in the playoffs?" And he said, "Well, it's a conversation I definitely need to have with Jacob."
Exactly. Okay, fine. You don't have to like everybody, but you're going to be professional about it, and you're gonna do things to benefit the team. And it's not personal.
Well,
so that's what I'm saying.
Jacoby wasn't very professional, not showing up to the post game.
Yeah. Well,
like, don't sulk. Don't sulk and be a baby. You didn't perform well enough to be put on the field. How about you man up and go into the clubhouse and answer some damn questions? You're making $20 million a year. You can answer to why you hit 250.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Everybody should be a professional and live up to their duties as well. And answering questions to the press from the press is part of the deal. So absolutely should do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're going to get into more stuff as the Yankees start to make some roster moves. And I think you mentioned this on the last podcast. The hot stove starts as soon as free agency starts, which is when the World Series essentially ends. Yeah. So I think we're going to have a lot to talk about in the offseason. And hopefully the Yankees make some moves to improve this team, because I think with some tweaks, they could be a good team again, a contender next year for the division.
No, I agree. And I think we have a mailbag, too, that I think would be a good way to kind of close this out. I think.
All right. Yes. Let's get into it.
Rudy G sent us a mailbag. Said, "Thanks for a great season. I just listened to the one and done episode and really helped with my depression and frustration. I'm glad it did. I live in Texas, so no one in my office shares my passion, and I was glad to see your episode instead of waiting for the next week. Also, I appreciate Scott's comments on pulling for Houston. I would rather see them win than the Rangers, and I feel a bit guilty. But after watching what happened last night, referring to the last game. Anyway, I love the team, and I do enjoy the podcast, so I'll definitely send in some topic suggestions. Only 136 days until spring training, 2016. So, yeah, Rudy, I mean, look, I think I wasn't really mad about the loss as far as who beat us, because I kind of – they're good. I got nothing against Houston. I really don't. I mean,
they're a young, exciting team.
Yeah, they're not they're not a division rival. I mean, I have zero hatred for the Houston Astros. At least right now, I do. A couple more losses to them in the playoff scenarios, then we'll start fueling that. But they are fun to watch. I mean, I like watching young teams play. I think it's exciting. So, them and the Royals, they have what? They'll have a game five. So that should be interesting.
Yeah, it looks like, yeah, both of those American League series are going to go to Game 5. Wouldn't it be interesting, I was thinking about this the other day, if the Astros make it to the World Series and play the Cubs and lose to the Cubs, then both Chicago teams will break their World Series droughts against the Houston Astros?
Oh, there you go, digging deep on that one.
Yeah, right?
Houston Astros are Chicago's best friend. They went to the American
League. They're just going to bounce back and forth to each league and lose in the World Series.
Yeah, exactly.
Got to get there first, obviously. But thanks, Rudy, for the mailbag. Definitely send in some more this offseason. And everybody listening, we want to hear from you. As we mentioned earlier, join the Facebook group, The Bronx Pinstripe Show. hit us up on Twitter, Instagram. Definitely submit to the podcast mailbag and the voicemail line, which is 646-480-0342. I'm pretty sure I remembered that correctly.
Yeah, Babe Ruth, Mariano Rivera.
There you go. Yeah, as we move into the offseason, it should be fun. Scott, any last words?
No, I'm excited. You know, I'm excited for the things that we're going to do on the show. I think it's going to be fun talking about all sorts of things, and you guys can get a lot more kind of, I guess, insight on how we look at other sports as well. And we definitely want to hear your opinions on things. So definitely hook us, you know, come out and hook up with us on social media, and let's do it. Big offseason for the Yankees, and you know, we're going to be building something good, I think, for 2016.
Awesome. Again, we're going to be doing episodes every Tuesday instead of Monday, so catch us next Tuesday. We'll talk to you then.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.